Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. As always, thank you for joining me. My name is Zachary Smith. I am your host once again to talk about a very interesting episode of NXT. Now, I do realize that I say that a lot, but number one, I get to review what I have always thought, even before I started as your host, as the best wrestling show in the world. Now, you could make a lot of cases for other shows, and I certainly watch a little bit of everything, but NXT was always my favorite to watch. And now the only difference is that I get to talk about it with you guys. Now, if you want to get in on the conversation, I'm always active on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT, that's ZachNXT. We are always talking about wrestling over there, talking about life, cracking jokes, so on, so forth. A lot of the stuff that makes it into the show comes from Twitter, so join in on the conversation there. As you know, we generally talk about what's going on in the world of wrestling, and WWE specifically at the top. And there's been a lot of negative as it pertains to WWE, and I've been a huge part of that, and that's understandable. There's a lot of things that either don't sit right or things that aren't being done well, so on and so forth. But I generally consider myself to be a positive guy, and so there are positives. And every once in a while, I like to take a step back and focus on that. Because at the end of the day, I'm here hosting, and Matt is here with the whole network we have here, and you're here listening because we love wrestling, and we're sticking it out through what a lot of people consider to be bad times. But not everything is bad. There's a few really fun things going on in WWE specifically. I mean, forget that AEW exists, and that in itself is fantastic. But we have a few fun things going on. We have Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. So the first thing is that Matt had me on to preview Clash of Champions the other day, and you can listen to that on the same feed you're listening to this episode. Check it out. We had a lot of fun with it. And one of the matches at Clash of Champions was a rematch between the WWE champion, Drew McIntyre, and the challenger, Randy Orton. They had an ambulance match. This is a rematch of their SummerSlam match that Drew also won. Now, as you know by now, Drew retained the title in that ambulance match, and it was a very interesting match because you had the legends that Orton killed returning. You had Big Show and Christian and Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair all injecting themselves into that match, and Randy Orton getting some of comeuppance for his actions. And I feel a couple different ways about this. On the one hand, it was just a bit odd to me that the face or the good guy in the match, Drew McIntyre, was the one getting the help. Now, Drew didn't know that he was going to be getting help from those legends, but it does put an interesting spin on it when the good guy didn't win by himself. And we have Hell in a Cell coming up, the pay-per-view, and presumably we're setting up for Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, the final match, I would presume, in a Hell in a Cell match. We've certainly got the story for a Hell in a Cell match. We don't always going into Hell in a Cell, but this time we have a couple. And on one hand, I am very nervous. I think on the preview show I picked Randy Orton, just because Randy Orton winning feels inevitable to me. And the reason that I am so nervous about it is because Drew McIntyre is my favorite WWE champion in some time. Probably since Kofi Kingston. Just in the way that Kofi Mania started, and just Kofi as WWE champion, something that Xavier Woods and Big E, his New Day teammates, always talked about. And it's something that I always wanted to see, but never thought I would. And WWE happens upon those moments every once in a while. Kofi Mania is not something they planned. It's not even something they necessarily wanted, but the fans would not be denied, and Kofi was a WWE champion. If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that there's very little that I take super seriously about wrestling. I have a lot of fun with it, but it's not a be-all, end-all in a lot of ways. But I think that championships are, in fact, very important. Now, I understand that they quite literally decide who's going to win beforehand. That's the entire conceit of professional wrestling. But I think that because of the fact that they have to make the decision to make you a champion, I think that it's a huge deal that when Kofi Kingston retires, he is a former WWE champion. I think that whether you are Randy Orton going on your 14th or 15th title win, or you're Drew McIntyre, who at WrestleMania won his first, I always think that it is a big deal when somebody becomes especially a WWE or a Universal champion. I just feel like that is a big mark on your resume. And I always tend to think of that when I am thinking of a wrestler's career. I was very happy when Russell Wilson, the quarterback of the Seahawks, won a Super Bowl in one of his first few seasons, because now, no matter what happens in the rest of your career, you are a Super Bowl champion. That's just, being a champion is important to me, and the history of that championship means that it is important. And as I said, Drew McIntyre is my favorite WWE champion in a long time. Drew McIntyre, since he came back, is a guy that was NXT champion and had all of the potential in the world, provided WWE went with him. And for the longest time on the main roster, they were not doing that. They put him with Dolph Ziggler. They had him losing to Roman Reigns in Roman Reigns' return match. He was always just a background character, and he had little character beyond the Scottish psychopath, which meant nothing. And then, at the Royal Rumble, Brock is running roughshod over everybody, and with some help from Ricochet and a low blow, Drew McIntyre eliminates Brock Lesnar. And they set up their match going into WrestleMania, and Drew McIntyre finally realizes his potential and becomes WWE champion. Now, becoming champion, that's one thing. Staying champion and being an interesting or good champion is another. And I think Drew has been better than that. Drew's been a great champion. Drew McIntyre is everything that you want in a champion. I often, for lack of better terminology, champion Io Shirai as a perfect example of a champion, in that whenever she gets in the ring, she makes her opponent better. And Drew also makes his opponent better. He makes everybody he's facing feel as important as they can, and he's going to have a good to great match with that person regardless. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. And he carries himself like a champion. He feels like he always should have been champion. He's so charismatic on the microphone, and every time he raises that championship, it feels important. Now, on the other side, we have Randy Orton, who's one of the most naturally gifted wrestlers to ever step foot in a ring. The knock on Randy Orton is that a lot of times he's on cruise control. And I could certainly understand, if I were that talented, that would probably happen to me too. If Randy Orton is in a story that he is not feeling, you will know about it. But ever since Edge returned, he has been on a different level, and he's realizing that same potential that he's always had, and he's having one of the best runs of his career. And so if anybody is going to beat Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton makes sense. Be clear, he's been champion since April was WrestleMania, so that's about 5 months, going on 6 months now. That's a pretty good title reign in the modern era of WWE. But it's a testament to Drew McIntyre that not only am I not sick of him as champion, which can happen, but I want him to be champion longer. I don't want him to lose to Randy Orton. Part of that is because I'm afraid of how they will use him once he is no longer the champion. But a lot of it is because he's so great as WWE champion. It makes me so happy every time he shows up on my screen, and I'm excited to see what he does next. So in my heart of hearts, I hope that after Hell in a Cell, Drew McIntyre is your WWE champion. But also in my heart of hearts, I don't think he will be. And when that time comes, I will certainly be disappointed, but I will be disappointed as a wrestling fan. I won't be disappointed in a behind-the-scenes way that I'm mad that somebody took it away from him. I'll be mad that the bad guy won. And that's really the point of a bad guy, isn't it? Then on the other side, on the SmackDown side, we have Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is your Universal Champion. And for the first time, people love it. The heel turn it into a bad guy and showing up with Paul Heyman. It was magnificent. The fact that they have flipped it a bit where Paul Heyman is not the advocate. It's Roman Reigns is not a Paul Heyman guy. Paul Heyman is a Roman Reigns guy. Those are Roman's words. We've talked about it on the show before. We all knew that Roman would make a great heel. I posited the theory that he actually has been a heel before. At Money in the Bank, I think it's 2016, when Roman is defending against Seth Rollins. That's the same night where Dean Ambrose won the Money in the Bank briefcase and cashed it in on Seth Rollins later. All three members of the Shield, WWE champion on the same night. Very cool. But in that match, Roman Reigns had the beard. Roman Reigns wasn't smiling. He wasn't happy to be there. Roman Reigns was the bully in that match against Seth Rollins, who is smaller than him. He threw him around. He was talking trash. He was very intense. He was a heel in that match. And that showed you some of the potential that Roman had. If they had turned Roman X number of years ago, rather than trying to force him to be the good guy that we all loved, he would already have that status now. But we're doing it now, and it feels earned, and it feels really good to have Roman be the Universal Champion, which you knew was coming regardless, but to do it in such a way that is very fulfilling as a story and Roman as a character. And I think a big part of that that can't be overlooked is Jey Uso. Jey Uso qualified in a match to earn the right to be the first challenger for Roman Reigns. And this is a hard spot to be in if you are Jey Uso. First off, you are a tag team guy who is now getting pushed into singles competition. So that's hard enough to start with. But you are facing your family member, and it is your job, or at least 50% your job, to make sure that Roman comes across the way that they want. That's the reason that Jey Uso was the first challenger. You needed somebody who was close to Roman Reigns that he could turn on and really cement the fact that he's a real nasty son of a gun. And Jey Uso not only fulfilled that, but Jey Uso's promos were fantastic. The people look at you and they say, there goes the big dog. There goes Roman Reigns. You know what they say when they see me? Which one are you? Still gives me chills, that line. Jey Uso took a situation that could have easily sunk him in terms of the weight and magnitude of that moment and excelled. The only way to maximize opportunities is to maximize every minute that you get out there, because you don't know how many you're going to get. And for Jey Uso, he had these moments and he stepped up more than I even thought he would as somebody who's doing this for the first time, and knocked it out of the park every minute that he was on that TV screen. I don't know if we're going to have Jey Uso have another match like this in his career. I don't know that they see him in that way. I think that this was a very specific use of Jey Uso. But I can absolutely see Jey Uso, until Jimmy is back from his injury, on a singles run, kind of similar to how Big E is on a singles run at the moment. I can see Jey Uso being a big player. I think Jey Uso has something very special. And I don't know that you would have thought that going into this match, or this program rather, But I think that he has made it abundantly clear to everybody now that he is not just somebody who can be an opponent to get somebody else over, but Jey Uso is a guy that you could run with as, let's say, Intercontinental Champion. I could absolutely see that. And one day, if we ever come back around to this match, I think it'll be even better. And it got Roman over in exactly the way it needed to. Roman was vicious, Roman was a bully, Roman was a jerk, and Roman was very single-minded. I am the champion, I am the breadwinner, I am the chief, I am the leader of this family, and you will acknowledge it. And I don't think anybody but Jey Uso could have told this story with Roman. And so whatever we do with Roman Reigns and however we feel about him going forward, a lot of it goes to Paul Heyman, a lot of it, and most of it goes to Roman Reigns, but a good chunk of that needs to go to Jey Uso as well. And I'm definitely not going to forget that. But what else I'm not going to forget is this episode of NXT. This Sunday is TakeOver. That snuck up on me. And so we have a recap of Kyle O'Reilly becoming the number one contender last week for Finn Balor's NXT title in that gauntlet match. We also get the on the Chiron that it's going to be Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae versus Damian Priest and Io Shirai tonight. Damian Priest being the North American champion, Io being the women's champion. Johnny and Candice will be challenging the two of them in separate matches at TakeOver. So we thought that this was going to be the match last week, so we are in fact going to get that mixed tag match. But we're starting off very strong with the entrance of Shotzi Blackheart in her miniature tank, because you better believe every time I see Shotzi, I better see that tank. Shotzi is so unique as a performer, and she, as we were talking about just a minute ago, makes the absolute most out of every minute, if I can say the word correctly. That's an N in the middle of minute, not another M, because mimit, I don't think, is a word. But every minute, nailed it, that she is on TV, she's fantastic. We've said this a lot. I don't think Shotzi Blackheart was a character that they were going to do anything particularly with originally. I think she was going to be a quirky, unique enhancement talent that they use sparingly. And then she eliminates Shayna Baszler in that battle royal, gets some shine, and then since then she's only gotten better, and every second she gets on the TV, she maximizes those minutes, and as a result, the powers that be in NXT have seen that and have started to run with her more, and she's been put in more and more impressive spots. A one-on-one match with the women's champion, even in a loss, her and Io were able to tell a beautiful story together, and that's only going to help Shotzi down the road. And I think you have someone special in Shotzi Blackheart that you can run with in a lot of different ways. And I don't think you would have thought that originally. I think she stuck out because of her green hair and her cool ring gear. And then she gets a tank and runs over Robert Stone a bunch of times. And since then, she's only gotten better. And that's really fun to see. Her opponent for today is Dakota Kai. She's out next for their match. She's accompanied by Raquel Gonzalez. It still doesn't feel like they know what to do with Dakota Kai. It feels like they had the really good idea to turn her heel and attack Tegan Nox originally at War Games. But I don't know. It feels like they want to do more with Dakota Kai, but they don't quite know where she fits, maybe. I'm not sure if it's that I'm not connecting with her or I want her to be more and or be something a little bit different, and maybe they haven't fully realized the character yet. I don't know exactly what it is, but it definitely doesn't feel like she has reached her apex yet or really even come close. I feel like there's more that we can do with her, and it's hard to tap into how to do that, but it definitely feels like we're in second gear as opposed to third or fourth. At one point in this match, Dakota Kai goes to back suplex Shotzi onto the ring apron, which, as you'll remember, every announcer telling you is the hardest part of the ring. That looked like it hurt like hell, and then they replayed it, and I realized that Shotzi Blackheart landed right on her friggin' head. And Shotzi's back up pretty quickly. The referee jumped out of the ring to check on her. Shotzi's back up, but that was really scary because she went right down on her head. That's like when Johnny was dropped on his neck and scared the crap out of everybody. That scared me. Luckily, Shotzi was right back up. Hopefully, she doesn't have any lingering injury or concussion from that, because that looked nasty when they did it. So Raquel Gonzalez trips Shotzi as she's running the ropes, and then Rhea Ripley runs out from the back and shoves Raquel Gonzalez into the ring steps. It's weird because Raquel Gonzalez is immediately back up. I don't think she had to take a bump, and is now focused on Rhea. And while she's doing that, Shotzi Blackheart gets a surprise roll-up win. That's a surprising win by Shotzi, but it actually makes a lot of sense in retrospect. It was weird that Rhea's attack was weird because it didn't have really any effect on Raquel except to divert her attention. I suppose we're setting up that she's very strong and she's a force to be reckoned with, but it was just odd that she was run into the steps, but it didn't really seem to have an effect. But seems like we're setting up Raquel and Rhea. That should be fun. And then I don't know if we're going to go forward with Dakota Kai and Shotzi Blackheart, or if we're just going to move on from there. But that was a fun match. All right, I'm going to level with you. Next, we have an interview with Santos Escobar and Swerve Scott. And I'm going to be honest, I started listening to it. I really did. And then I blanked out for a bit. And so they just go back and forth. And it's the Cruiserweight title, so it isn't important. Swerve is a potentially very special wrestler, and I hope that they do more with him going forward. Swerve doesn't need the Cruiserweight title. That's what we're setting up, but he doesn't need it. He needs to be in the North American title picture, because the Cruiserweight title is an anchor rather than a flotation device. It's an interesting looking title. It had great beginnings, but I don't think WWE necessarily knows what to do with a Cruiserweight title or division, or at the very least, they don't know what to do for it to be of any importance. And so whoever the Cruiserweight champion is, it just feels like it's you're not quite a regular member of NXT, and I guess you'll be on 205 Live, but I have just never connected with that title past the first Cruiserweight Classic. It's unfortunate that TJP won. You could check out his Twitter if you want to be mad. Turns out he's kind of a douche. But the Cruiserweight title is more of an albatross than it is anything special or helpful. And I want Swerve to be out of this story because I don't find it particularly interesting, and I know he can do a lot more. And I want him to be in a title picture of a title that's actually going to be important, because what's going to happen is he's going to win the Cruiserweight title, and then it's not going to mean anything, and I'm going to see Swerve less as the Cruiserweight champion than I would if he was just a regular member of the NXT roster. So. We have another vignette of that mystery person that looks like a video game character getting on a motorcycle and driving down the street, talking about they say you can never go home again. But then you look and see home isn't what you remember it being. The 10-4-2020 comes on the screen again. I'm not sure if this is a man or a woman. It seems like a woman, but I don't know. It's filmed in that like dark vision green hue again. It's someone that's returning, not debuting. So that'll be interesting to see who it is. A lot of people have speculated that it could be Ember Moon if it's a woman, or Bo Dallas if it's a man. I would love for it to be Bo Dallas with a new character. I feel like there's a lot of untapped potential with him, and he was great in NXT in his first run. Could also be good if it's Ember Moon. I was never the biggest Ember Moon fan in NXT, just because I feel like she was defined by a rivalry with Asuka that is one of those rivalries that's only a rivalry because people say the word rivalry. It's a very one-sided affair, and so it never really landed with me, but this new character could be interesting. I mean, I need to see more. I mean, we're gonna find out here on Sunday, because that's when we're gonna get the re-debut of this character. So, I mean, the vignettes have been interesting. I think we just got the two, so I'll be interested to see what this character looks and acts like whether it's a man or a woman, and who it is at TakeOver. So that's a fun little surprise that's waiting for us at some point at TakeOver. It's a Kyle O'Reilly retrospective. It's like a mini chronicle episode about Kyle O'Reilly. It says he started in a small kickboxing gym in British Columbia. It said he took to it like a fish to water. He said, even if I were still wrestling for $5 every other weekend, I would still be doing it because this is my love and my passion. He talks about Undisputed Era being the best thing that ever happened to him personally and professionally. That they're his best friends, and his brother Adam Cole talks about how proud he is of Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle says he had his sights set on Finn Balor for a long time. I come to Japan and Finn's leaving Japan. I come to NXT and Finn is on Raw. And now, to be in the main event of TakeOver is 15 years in the making. This really was a mini chronicle episode. It really sets up Kyle O'Reilly well. Him as a singles wrestler is out of nowhere, but he's definitely ready. He's done it before, and him and Finn are going to have a great match. Kyle O'Reilly is unfortunately defined by being with Bobby Fish in the Undisputed Era in that when he is out as a singles wrestler, you're unfamiliar with it, so you're not immediately connected to it. But Kyle O'Reilly has been everywhere, and he has been a singles wrestler for a lot of it, and he is excellent. And if you aren't familiar with Kyle O'Reilly's work as a singles wrestler, buckle the hell up, because him and Finn Balor is going to be fantastic. That's the main event. It should be the main event. They're going to tear the house down. I can promise you that. We get the news that Kyle O'Reilly and Finn are going to be face-to-face tonight, and that is going to be hosted by Shawn Michaels. We get a notification that Tegan Nox has suffered a torn ACL. Now, that could be a story. She was attacked last week, but if that is true and she has a torn ACL, I really, really sincerely and very much like Tegan Nox. She makes me happy when she's on my screen. If that is true, I'm not sure if she's going to be able to come back as a wrestler again. This would be the second or third ACL injury. You can come back from one, you can come back from two. If this is three, at a certain point, one, you're just susceptible to that injury, so you're always going to have to worry about it. Two, you have to think about your life after wrestling, and I don't know if you want to put yourself through that after effect of this rehab again and this injury and making it worse potentially. And third, eventually you just won't be the same. Part of the problem with an ACL tear or injuries like that is a lot of people don't come back exactly the same. Now, there are athletes that have that, and then they come back, and they are either just as good in rare cases, or they find ways to adapt. And Tegan Nox definitely did that. She found ways to adapt, but at a certain point, you have to start thinking about your health as a person, not as a wrestler. And if this is true, and I'm not just being taken for a ride, which has happened before and will certainly happen again, the only difference now is it's recorded and you get to listen to it. It would be very unfortunate if this is true, because I sincerely am happy every time I see Tegan Nox on the screen and she wrestles. But I care about her more as a person than I do as a wrestler. I say that as somebody who has never met her, nor ever will. But I hope that she is, if this is true, and she's not able to wrestle, because this is very serious to have as a multiple-time injury, that she can either be in a role on commentary or an on-screen role or something else, because she's too talented to just be done with wrestling, if wrestling is still something she wants to do. And if being a wrestler is still what she wants to do, I absolutely support that. I would just worry that every time she takes a bad fall, something bad is going to happen. And for her, I don't want that. So I hopefully that's not true. Cut to the back, and Austin Theory is being interviewed And the interviewer asks, you asked for this time. Is this to talk about your recent struggles? He says, struggles. And he denies that he's struggling, but he is very much struggling. I'm not sure where this story is going to go, this Austin Theory is losing a lot story. But Theory has looked impressive in all his matches. He's a very good wrestler, but he is definitely stuck in a losing streak story, and he'll have to find a way to break out of it. So we'll see if that's him turning face or him turning into a good guy or just breaking through it, or if him and Johnny form a team, something to that effect. They could use more teams. I don't know, but we'll see. It's interesting to do this with a bad guy overcoming this. This seems like the kind of story you would have with a babyface or a good guy having to overcome these odds, but it's interesting having it be a heel or a bad guy who just flat out just denies that it's even happening and looks at you like you're stupid for mentioning that they haven't won. So that's a fun way of doing the story. Adam Cole's in the ring with Mike. He says, for 3 years, Undisputed Era has been in NXT, and for 3 years we have dominated. Nothing has changed. We're the same Undisputed Era that won the first War Games match. We're the same Undisputed Era that's dominated this brand like nobody has before and nobody will again. He calls out Austin Theory to the ring. Austin Theory slighted Kyle O'Reilly in his interview. And Austin Theory comes out with no music, talking crap. Theory says, you ain't got to be so mad. Adam Cole wants him to get in the ring. He says, you have two options. One, you could bring your stupid face here and fight me. I didn't add the stupid face thing. He said that. It really cuts the intensity when you say stupid face. I don't know why it's that combination of words, but he says, option two, don't move, and me and the rest of Undisputed Era will meet you out there and will beat you and make you beg for option one. Theory says, you're going to jump me? Oh, okay. So Theory takes option one, gets to the ring, and we have ourselves a match. Eventually, Adam Cole hits the last shot. Adam Cole beats Austin Theory. That was a really good match, which is really hard to do with a story that was literally set up with two interviews and nothing else. These are two great wrestlers that we are lucky have chemistry, and they had a really fun match. And the right person won. We're continuing the weird story with Austin Theory. Never a huge fan of the this person only ever loses and they can't buy a win stories, just because it diminishes you as a person who can win a match. Eventually there will be a payoff and it will be a big deal, but it, you know, this is just not my favorite kind of story, but this was a really, really good match and it was really fun to watch. Cut to the back again. Damian Priest and Io Shirai are being interviewed. Priest says, tonight is a preview of TakeOver. The rock stars of NXT are taking care of a little business. Io cuts a short promo as well. And they fist bump. Damian Priest says, she's cool as hell. Walks off. Io says, he's not too bad. Shawn Michaels is in the ring. It's kind of a dark background and then the white ring ropes. They're sitting at a table in the middle of the ring. There's three chairs set up. Says, setting up the TakeOver main event, he brings in Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor. They shake hands and have a seat. Finn congratulates Kyle. He says he respects him as a competitor. He's looking forward to the TakeOver match. Kyle also has nothing but respect. Finn says he knows how good Kyle is. He's proved himself as a tag competitor and all over the world as a singles competitor. This starts to devolve. This never gets physical. They never shout at each other, but it starts to devolve where Kyle says that that Finn's really good at stroking his own ego. He says Finn is so certain that he's going to win. He says, you're defending the title. That's what a champion is supposed to do, even when victory is not attainable. And he's certain that he's going to win. Finn says he's certain that Kyle's going to bring it, but he's not certain if he's going to show up with his Undisputed Era friends. Kyle rubs his hand together, and he essentially says that the Undisputed Era is one hand washing the other. But this Sunday, this is Kyle O'Reilly's moment, intimating that, as we thought, you know, Undisputed Era won't be interfering in the match, which makes sense. Shawn Michaels says that there might be a problem with Kyle winning the title with Undisputed Era, with Adam Cole specifically. Tipping a hat to that animosity that's been going on, where when Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong were, I forget who they were attacking, and Kyle O'Reilly doesn't jump in. He gets out of the ring, and he's clearly unhappy with what they're doing. Now, Adam Cole's also a babyface now, or a good guy. Kyle O'Reilly is as well. I'm less sure about Roderick Strong. I think he's going with them, but I'm not sure. And I'm definitely not sure about Bobby Fish, just because I haven't seen him. And so there's an interesting dynamic here where I don't know if we're going to have a Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish have an issue, or if Adam Cole is going to be jealous kind of thing. It doesn't seem like it, since Adam Cole just became a good guy. But I like that there's kind of an unspoken, unacted upon animosity here, just because all four of these guys are changing a little bit as people. And so it'll be interesting to see how that affects Undisputed Era as a whole, because their ideas have been aligned to this point. But as things are changing, it seems like they're a little bit less tight than they were. There's no shoving, there's no yelling at each other, there's no words exchanged. But just the way they're reacting to each other is a little bit different each time I see them. And so I'm interested to see, because there's not a clear blow-up point here, but it seems like something is simmering and eventually something's going to boil over, which is great, and it's tense, and I think something's going to happen, but I don't know, and I don't know how. It's a good feeling when I can't call it, or I don't think that I can call it. Finn says, I believe you have everything it takes to be the NXT champion, and you would be if anyone were champ besides Finn Balor. They go back and forth, and my takeaway is that this was really friggin' good, and it made me feel like Kyle could really win the NXT title. Everyone came across great, and despite the jokes back and forth, it came across as both of them being supremely confident and both of them being dangerous. A lot of times with face-to-faces or contract signings, you're just waiting for the moment when somebody flips the table over, or they start fighting, or they start yelling back and forth. Neither of these men raised their voices at all. Neither of them stood up. Neither of them were physically threatening. But they were both very confident, and it started as, I respect you, I respect you, and ended with Finn saying that he was going to slap the freckles off of Kyle O'Reilly's face at TakeOver. So this got more and more intense while they weren't changing their cadence or volume at all. And you don't see that a lot in these situations. Wrestling, especially in promos in these kinds of situations, naturally you're going to start projecting more. You're going to raise your voice and you're going to get more intense as you want the person to understand what you're going to do to them. In this case, they got their points across very well without changing their tone, without changing their volume or their pitch or anything. It was just the words they were saying started to morph into more and more threatening. And they're both just supremely confident. They're both 100% sure they're walking away as the NXT champion. This is interesting because my logical side tells me that Finn Balor is not going to lose the NXT title on his first defense. But I'm now wrapped up in this story, and this is how wrestling gets me every time, and I'm 100% fine with it. With the mini chronicle episode on Kyle O'Reilly and this promo, it makes me feel like Kyle O'Reilly can and maybe should win the NXT title from Finn Balor. If Kyle O'Reilly loses, that's the end of this version of the story. And I really like this story, and I don't want it to be over. And I want to see what would happen with Undisputed Era if Kyle O'Reilly won the title. I don't want Finn to just beat him. Now, when TakeOver comes this Sunday and they have their fantastic match they're going to have, I'm not really going out on a limb saying that, I doubt that I'm going to be disappointed with whoever wins. But because I am now wrapped up in the story and wrapped up in Kyle O'Reilly, they've done a masterful job of making me care about Kyle O'Reilly, the singles wrestler, in just 2 weeks' time. And he's cut essentially one long promo with Finn Balor. That's really hard to do, to make me care this much with such a short time to build somebody up and build intrigue in a match. But they've done it, and they've made me want to see Kyle O'Reilly win the title. This has been happening to me Oh, wow. I shoved all those letters together into one Frankenstein of a word. This has been happening to me. Nailed it. Since the Chronicle on Nakamura before he challenged AJ Styles for the WWE title. And it showed Shinsuke just as a person. And it made me think that Shinsuke was going to win the WWE title. I was wrong. And it made me think that Shinsuke should win the WWE title, which probably in retrospect he should have. But when you focus on a person like this and you do it really well, like a Chronicle always does, they just did one on Jey Uso, same effect, it makes me care about them and it makes me want to see them do well. And generally they do it before a big match or a championship match, where they talk about what winning that would mean to them, and it makes me want them to succeed. And that's a credit to WWE, and in this case, it's a credit to NXT for putting this together so quickly and so expertly. So, even if there had been no story, if you tell me Finn Balor, Kyle O'Reilly for the NXT title, just as a match, I'm going to watch that. But wrestling is at its best, NXT is at its best, when it's two great wrestlers who you just know are going to have good chemistry, or you hope at least, and think they will, and then they have this story. And the root of this story is so simple, but so fascinating. Both of them are 100% sure that they are better and are going to walk out of TakeOver as the NXT champion. They're both very excited to fight each other, and they're both 100% sure that they are going to win. They're both cocky, they're both confident, and they're both going into it knowing that the other guy isn't as good and knowing that they're going to win. And the interesting part is that only one of them can. And it made me go from, oh, that's going to be really cool, to, man, when is TakeOver? I needed to be here sooner. And that's what wrestling is about. Wrestling is about stories, and it's about emotions, and it's about two people just engrossed in a personal conflict. And this one has been so expertly told without physical violence, with just a stare down last week and a very calm in tone discussion or argument back and forth this week. And now I'm ready to go. They told me everything I need to know about this match in just a few minutes. And I can't stress enough how hard that must be to do. This is not new for Kyle O'Reilly, but it's been some time since he's been the spotlight by himself. Finn Balor's been here before, but it doesn't make it any easier to do it in such a short time. But I got everything that I'm going to need to know about both of these men, everything I'm going to need to know about the match, everything I need to know about the stakes, and everything I need to know about how it's going to affect the winner and loser from a very short segment where they didn't even raise their voice. And that, if you are an aspiring wrestler or promoter or producer and are looking for a masterful way to tell a story in a less than conventional way, I would implore you to watch this segment and watch last week and take notes. So, we found out that Swerve is going to be challenging Santos Escobar for his cruiserweight title, and Velveteen Dream is going to be challenging Kushida, are both going to be added to the TakeOver card. We have ourselves a card and a half here. The Velveteen Dream one is weird. We've talked about that before. I'm not comfortable covering Velveteen Dream. That's why you haven't heard his name till now. But I want you to know what's going to be happening on the card. And that's unfortunate because I really like Kushida. And I like his character right now. His intense, kind of brooding, angry character that he's doing. And I will watch the match on Sunday, but I'm going to be uncomfortable while I do it. And as those stories progress, as you may or may not have heard, I'm not going to be going out of my way to cover Velveteen Dream, just because with everything that went on and the way it was resolved, that's not enough for me, and I have too much trouble separating art from artist to just look over that. But Kushida, Velveteen Dream, and Swerve Escobar is added to that takeover card. We have ourselves a really good takeover. Every takeover seems like it tries to top the last takeover. And in the COVID or pandemic era, that's been a lot harder because the crowd is so important to the takeover experience. But this is the first time in a while that the takeover card by itself and not only the matches in ring, but the stories going into it are so strong that I feel like it has a chance to be the best takeover or NXT show since the pandemic started. We'll have to parse out where it ranks after the fact if it goes off like I think it will, because of the lack of crowd. But I think that this is going to be a fantastic takeover show, and I think it's going to be really, really fun to watch. Johnny and Candice are out first for that mixed tag match as our main event. Damian Priest is out next, and then Io Shirai's music cuts in over his, and they enter the ring together. I'm still not connecting with Damian Priest as a character, and I'm not exactly sure why. I think it's a little bit that he doesn't feel real. I think it's a little bit that he is a babyface or a good guy who still acts and talks like a heel or a bad guy. He's not a particularly likable character. Not Damian Priest, the man, but the character they're having him portray at the moment. And that's fine. You don't have to be just a kind of white meat, gee golly shucks, good guy. There can be shades of gray. But I don't know. This feels like an incomplete character. And I thought that about Cameron Grimes for the longest time. I didn't connect with him. I didn't care. I didn't hate him or dislike him. I just didn't care. And now he's one of the highlights of NXT each week for me. So it could just be time as well and putting him in different situations where he can shine. Cameron Grimes grew on me very quickly. So maybe it's just that, and we'll have to see. Io Shirai, obviously, is one of the best champions in all of WWE. We've gone over that. They're having a fun match. Damian Priest setting up for the reckoning, but the referee's distracted, and Candice LeRae runs in and kicks a low blow on Damian Priest, and then Johnny's able to hit that apron DDT after the fact to steal a win. Io Shirai runs in the ring and is confronting Johnny. Candice runs up behind her and hits a backstabber to Io. So Damian Priest and Io Shirai are down in the ring, and Johnny goes and gets both the titles and takes a knee in front of Candice in the ring and hands her the title, so they're posing with their titles. It's interesting because Johnny and Candice get the win, and they're posing over the fallen champions with the champions' titles. And generally, in wrestling logic, that means that Johnny and Candice are both going to lose. You generally wouldn't have Johnny and Candice stand tall over the champions and then have them win the titles. So I didn't think that they were going to win. I know Candice isn't going to win, or at least she shouldn't. And I would be more okay with Johnny winning, but I don't think he needs it. So I think that Damian Priest and Io Shirai are both going to walk out as champions at the end of this. So, I mean, we'll have to see, but I don't know. I also think Swerve's going to win the Cruiserweight title, just because I feel like we're running back this match again, and it just feels like it's time. Again, I want Swerve to be North American champion, not Cruiserweight champion, but we have what we have. So I think Swerve walks away with that title. I think Kushida wins, just because anything else, and I'm going to feel weird about that. So we have those matches. Obviously, our main event, Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly. Logic dictates that it would be Finn Balor. I'm just going to go with kind of what I want at the moment, foolishly, and say that Kyle O'Reilly is going to walk out with the NXT title, just because I think that is almost more interesting to me, personally. So we'll have to see. But I snuck in some predictions for you for TakeOver. I'll take Io Shirai, I'll take Damian Priest, I'll take Kyle O'Reilly, I'll take Kushida, and I'll take Swerve. I'm sure I'll be wrong. My prediction game is not the strongest, but let me know on Twitter. Did I get it right? Did I get it wrong? You can make fun of me for picking Kyle. You can make fun of me when he loses. That'll be fun, huh? again, if you want to make fun of me or if you want to talk about, let me know what you think about the TakeOver card we have. Let me know who you think is going to win, what champions we're going to have after TakeOver. You can always find me on Twitter again, at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. I'd love to hear what you think about this week's NXT, how they built these matches, and what you think of TakeOver, and if you agree with my predictions, or maybe you have some different ones. But in the meantime, I will talk to you next week. Enjoy TakeOver, as I hope that you have enjoyed this episode. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic, as you always are. Thank you for listening.